Hello, and welcome to Here and Now. Today is Friday, the 7th of November, and it's the Green Team again, gathered here to read you items from the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post. My name is Gwen Wedden, and today I'm joined by Chris, Graham and Lynn, who will introduce themselves as we go.
Hello, it's Chris here. I've got the headline from the Tynmouth Post. Pump trials to save cliff face. Network Rail is pressing on with plans to shore up the cliffs above the railway line outside Tynmouth, despite the government halting the project last summer. Work on a dewatering trial to stabilise the cliffs between Parsons Tunnel and Tynmouth will start in the next few weeks. The trial, which is due to run until April 2026, will test a mechanism for pumping water out of the cliffs to assess if it will help to prevent landslips. Two new wells, 60 and 30 metres deep, will be dug into the land above Spray Point. Network Rail will install two pumps to drain water from the cliffs and into the sea via a temporary pipe under the railway, which will discharge just past Spray Point. Removing water from the cliff will make them more stable, explained Network Rail communications manager Alex Winter. He was at the Teen Estuary and Coastal Partnership Forum held at Tynmouth Pavilions earlier this week. During the trial, one pump will run for 7 consecutive days and nights, and then the second pump will operate for 7 consecutive days and nights. A new borehole will also be dug and used alongside 4 existing boreholes to monitor how successful this dewatering method is. If the trial is successful, Network Rail plan to apply for funding to run a second trial on a location further north in the cliffs. A minimum of 2 trials are required to prove the concept, said Network Rail. Should trials prove successful, Network Rail hopes to secure government funding to complete Phase 5 of its Southwest Rail Resilience Programme. The 5th phase is estimated to cost around £80 million. Last summer, the government announced it was stalling the project to secure the vital rail link. However, MPs and rail experts argue that shoring up the cliffs, which are subject to regular falls, is the most important phase of the project.
Hello, I'm Graham, and the first Dawlish Gazette headline today is Accolades for Town's Missing Link Project. The Dawlish Sweet Violets Bridge and the new Link Road project, dubbed the Dawlish Missing Link, has won a prestigious engineering award. The Link Road and 26-metre spans bridge over Shutterton Brook won the under £10 million New Build Award category at the ICE Southwest Civil Engineering Awards 2025 in Bristol. While the road is not yet open to the public, it was built to improve local connectivity and reduce congestion. It connects the A379 by Sainsbury's to more than 400 new homes at Secmerton Farm and Swan Park. It also provides access to approximately 400 new homes at Gatehouse Farm. Additionally, the scheme includes foot and cycle paths and sustainable drainage. The £6.2 million project was funded by £4.9 million in government grants and £1.3 million in developer contributions. The judges said the project overcame significant changes, including poor ground conditions and pressurised groundwater, resolved through an innovative soil mixing solution. They also said, designed with ecological enhancements and landscape to blend into surroundings, The scheme supports future growth and resilience. It delivers lasting social, environmental, and economic benefits for the community. They added that the project displayed exceptional balance of technical excellence, community engagement, and historical sensitivity. Councillor Rosie Dawson, Devon County Council's local member for Dawlish, said, "I'm delighted for the team's work to be recognised in this way. It's been years of planning to get to this point, and I continue to work with planning at Timbridge and the developers to get the link road open as agreed by the time the 51st home is occupied." Councillor Gary Taylor, Executive Member for Planning at Timbridge District Council, said, "It's fantastic news that the Sweet Violets Bridge and Link Road has been recognised for its technical excellence. This award is a testament to the vision, collaboration and innovation that brought Dawlish's missing link to fruition. The project not only improves connectivity and reduces congestion, but also supports sustainable growth and enhances the local environment. It's a great example of what can be achieved through strong partnerships."
Hello, Lynn here. Tens of millions needed for Trust's repair bill. The repair bill for the maintenance backlog at Torbay and South Devon Trust stands, unfortunately, at tens of millions of pounds, new figures suggest. Health think tank, the King's Fund, warned decrepit NHS buildings have a real and detrimental impact on patient care, and called on the government to be honest around the tough trade-offs around the funding problems that lie ahead. NHS England figures for the year to April suggest it would cost £64.1 million to fully repair all known maintenance issues across the 19 sites in the Torbay and South Devon Trust. The most expensive site within the Trust is Torbay District General Hospital, which has an estimated maintenance bill of £52.4 million. Across England, the total cost of eliminating all outstanding NHS maintenance issues was approximately £15.9 billion, and that's up 16% on around £13.8 billion the last year. The figures account for a backlog maintenance and the estimated cost to restore a building to a certain state based on assessed risks. It does not include planned maintenance work yet to happen. These figures also only account for the NHS providers of secondary care, including hospitals, mental health trusts and ambulances. But Siva Andasivia, Director of Policy Events and Partnerships at the King's Fund, warned GP practices are also deteriorating. These outdated practices risk undermining government ambitions to shift more care closer to the community, he said. To develop a more preventative and community-based NHS, the government may need to focus any future growth in capital investment into the new neighbourhood health services, while being honest that more hospital estates may continue to go into managed decline in the meantime as a result. The data also reveals the cost of the most urgent high-risk repairs at Torbay and South Devon Trust being around £3.4 million. A recent report by NHS providers, which represents NHS services in England, said boosting investment in health infrastructure would benefit both the NHS and the national economy. Chief Executive Daniel Elkies said, "We can't keep wasting eye-watering sums to prop up ageing buildings and equipment not fit for purpose. Critical parts of the NHS are falling to bits, unfortunately, literally. The safety of patients and staff is at risk from leaks, floods, and other faults that cause operations and appointments to be postponed. We need to be able to spend more of the NHS's budget on up-to-date facilities and technology to tackle the huge and growing repairs bill, and therefore to make the NHS as modern as possible.
Meet Flint, the sanctuary's young Icelandic colt. The Mare and Foal Sanctuary is celebrating having named their young Icelandic colt thriving under their care at the charity's Newton Abbott Rescue Centre. The charity says it was delighted to announce the winning name for the little Icelandic colt who has captured hearts across the UK and beyond. And his new name? It's Flint. Flint arrived at the sanctuary with his dam, Mavis, just after his birth in May. Completely unhandled and initially shy, he has flourished under the charity's patient care. He's now relaxed, loves being groomed, and has begun head collar training. As Flint is growing, his colouring is changing, and he has become darker in recent weeks, a very handsome young colt. But his eyes remain a beautiful bright blue. The naming competition was launched to involve the charity's supporters in his story and to raise awareness of its work caring for rescued equines, people, nature and wildlife. The winning name was suggested by Zoe from South Devon, who will be invited to come and meet Flint. Head of the sanctuary care, Layla Anstey, said, "We've had scores of brilliant suggestions from all over the country, and it took us a long time to sift through them all and choose a name we felt was perfect for this beautiful little Icelandic foal. The name Flint suits him because it gives a sense of his steely coat and bright, striking eyes. It's a short, strong name that reflects his hardy, spirited nature and the spark of personality he's shown since arriving. We'd like to say a huge thank you to everyone who has shown interest in Flint's story and is now following us. We feel he has a bright and happy future ahead, and we can't wait to share his journey with our supporters. Without their kindness, it simply wouldn't be possible for us to give vulnerable foals like Flint the loving care, treatment and training they need to survive." And of course, it's a beautiful photograph of the little colt. Flint.
Ashburton Trike fundraiser doubles goal. A woman with a rare condition has been overwhelmed after appealing for help to fix her motorised trike, raise double the amount she had asked for. Becca Klinkenberg from Ashburton lives with Friedreich ataxia, a rare neurological condition that progressively affects mobility. To allow her to get out and about, she uses a motorized trike, which is a vital lifeline, allowing her to stay active and connected. She uses it to get outdoors, explore the moors, and maintain her independence, often with her little dog Bodhi by her side. But the trike's motor urgently needs replacing. After local group Ashburton Dad's Football Club raised funds earlier this year to buy new batteries, a GoFundMe appeal was launched. Becca's target was £550 to cover the cost of the motor, but the appeal has far surpassed that, reaching more than £1,000. The fundraiser was organised by Becca's friend, Dr. Kate Strasden, senior lecturer at Falmouth University. She said Becca is already overwhelmed by the support and that it will make a huge difference to the quality of her life. On her fundraiser, Becca explained, "I grew up in the town and still love spending time outdoors in the lanes and on the moors when I can. But I have a problem. My trike needs some urgent repairs. I am totally stuck without my trike, and I badly miss all the benefits of fresh air and seeing everyone on my travels. I wish that I did not have to ask for help, but the trike is my lifeline and keeps me in touch with the world outside.
Newly qualified recruits strengthen the RNLI crew. Tynmouth Royal National Lifeboat Institute has strengthened its shore crew after two new volunteers passed their qualifications. Ruth Patton and Tom Schletter successfully passed out of their trainee assessments last week following a visit from RNLI trainee assessor Lyle Staniford. The pair joined Tynmouth Lifeboat Station at the start of the summer. They have spent the last few months working hard to learn the wide range of skills needed to support the volunteer lifeboat operations. As shore crew, they play a vital role in launching and recovering the lifeboat, managing the safety of the launch area, refueling and servicing the boats when they return from a shout, all training exercises, and maintaining the equipment and ensuring the crew and boat are ready to respond whenever the pager sounds. It's been an incredible few months learning from such a dedicated team, said Ruth. I've loved getting stuck in and understanding how every role contributes to saving lives at sea. Tom added, becoming part of the RNLI has been really rewarding. The training has been thorough and challenging, but the support from everyone at the station has been fantastic. Lifeboat Station Operations Manager Andy Linburn said, "We're delighted to see Ruth and Tom qualify as shore crew. They've shown great enthusiasm and commitment from day one, and their hard work and teamwork really have paid off. They'll be a real asset to the station. Tynmouth RNLI operates from the original 1862 lifeboat house near the Point car park. It carries out around 50 rescues every year, and volunteers play an essential role in providing the 24-hour search and rescue service, which is funded entirely by volunteer donations and legacies." And another update from the local RNLI crew is that there's a pager milestone for the new recruits. Two new lifeboat recruits can now respond to call-outs after receiving their RNLI pagers. Will Annell and Will Burton Jr. were officially presented with their devices by Lifeboat Operations Manager Andy Lilburn at last week's volunteer crew meeting. It's a big step in the trainee program, and it means both are now ready to respond whenever the pager goes off, a spokesperson from Tynmouth Lifeboat Station said. On behalf of everyone at Tynmouth RNLI, well done to you both. We're proud to have you on the team, the spokesperson added. Will Annell joined Tynmouth Lifeboat Station as a trainee volunteer crew member at the start of the summer, and he took part in his first official shout last month. Well done.
Mystic beasts bring Samhain to Tynmouth. The streets of Tynmouth were alive with mythical beasts and beating drums last Saturday, November the 1st, as the Folk Presentation Society brought a Samhain dusking ceremony and parade to the town. The annual festival, which has its roots in Celtic tradition, marks the end of summer and welcomes in the dark months of winter. In an array of costumed beasts, including horses and birds, masked beings, percussionists and local folk joined the procession from 4th Street. The parade continued through the town centre and along the seafront to the back beach for sunset and a short ceremony to remember those who have returned to the earth. Today is a turning point where we say a fond farewell to the summer and we embrace wholeheartedly the winter and the dark months to come, said Folk Preservation Society co-founder Amarie Rose. And there are a number of photographs of these strange mythical beasts. A horse's skull, a cow, a man with a bowler hat that's got lots of dead flowers on it, and a very strange, ugly-looking person is all I could say.
Tributes paid to Tynmouth shanty legend. Tributes have been paid to one of the founding members of Tynmouth shanty group, the Back Beach Boys. Bob Freshwater passed away peacefully at the Rowcroft Hospice. A talented songwriter who painstakingly researched historical records to create his music, Bob was a prolific creator of locally based songs. In a Facebook post announcing Bob's death, the Back Beach Boys described him as a wise and diplomatic natural leader and a beautiful soul who was loved by all who knew him. As well as creating music, Bob loved nature and kept cattle and sheep. The former head teacher was also a keen rugby fan and previously chaired Tynmouth Rugby Club. The Back Beach Boys were founded in February 2013. The Maritime Band was named after Tynmouth's Back Beach and are well known for their charity fundraising and brightly coloured Hawaiian shirts.
Tynmouth gulls spread their wings. A trio of seagulls released from Tynmouth Promenade Park Run earlier this year have spread their wings on their global migration. Named after three of the event's long-standing volunteers, Paul, Jerry and Keith, the model gulls were presented to visitors to the Tynmouth event on May the 3rd. Since then, they have kind of taken flight paths across the globe. Paul the seagull is currently in Canada. He was picked up by a park runner called Chris from Kamloops Park Run in British Columbia. Chris will now take him to Toronto and New York and then back to Melbourne in Australia, reported Paul Burgess, Tynmouth's Promenade Park Run event director. Paul is hoping his namesake seagull will then make it to Auckland to meet his son, Tom Burgess. Meanwhile, Jerry recently attended the Rome Pinto Park Run in Italy. There's a lovely picture of one of these gulls over in Canada with Paul holding the said seagull. Have good travels.
Village school crossing petition gains momentum. More than 220 people have signed a petition for a zebra crossing to be installed in Star Cross. Parents of children at the village primary school and the councillors have called for the crossing on a busy village road so children can go safely to and from school. The petition has so far gained 220 signatures. That is 1 in 8 residents in the village. The plight of youngsters crossing New Road has been exacerbated in recent weeks because the main road through the village has been shut for essential works. It's meant all traffic has been diverted along New Road and past Starcross Primary School. However, Teambridge councillor Gary Taylor said the road closure has highlighted the danger for children to get to and from school safely, and there is not a safe crossing point. Now, along with Councillor Alan Connett, the Devon County Councillor who represents Starcross at County Hall, they have launched a petition to win backing from local residents for the crossing. Councillor Connett explained, "Parents and village residents have been hugely worried about the increase in traffic on New Road during the closure of the main road through the village. While that will come to an end, there will be a time in the future when the road is closed for an emergency or roadworks and will be back to the same position. The only safe way to ensure children can cross New Road is to have a crossing right by the village primary school. There's already one in Exminster serving the primary school there, and we need one now in Star Cross."
Cardiac care changes raise fatality fears. People will undoubtedly die if changes in Devon's cardiac care mean long delays in getting patients the emergency care they need, it has been claimed. Councillor John Nutley spoke out at a full Tonbridge Council meeting amid concerns over the future of cardiac services. Health chiefs say there are no current plans to make changes, having shelved a proposed trial in which acute services would be concentrated in Exeter. That led thousands of people across Torbay and South Devon to protest that the extra time taken to reach hospital would cost lives. But protesters say they fear that shelving the proposal in favour of a full review of cardiac services will not stop the move to take some crucial emergency heart care away from Torbay. "People will undoubtedly die," said Councillor Nutley. "Every minute counts when you have a heart attack. If you are not treated within a short space of time, you may be left with severe impacts on your health. Patients could be dead by the time they reach hospital." He said that if services were taken away from Torbay, the chances of patients surviving would be reduced dramatically. He added, "it would entail merging Torbay's first-class facilities with underperforming Exeter, which already has a long waiting list. We must fight to save our life-saving cardiac department at hospital, Torbay Hospital," he said. "And if we lose even a section of the department, the rest of the acute services at Torbay Hospital may fall like a pack of cards." In Torbay, the Heart Campaign has raised more than £2,000 for leaflets, banners and publicity material to publicise its campaign against any cuts to local services. Clinicians at Torbay Hospital have already offered to take some of Exeter's patients to ease the pressure on services there as a way of staving off any cuts.
Send shoe protest is held at County Hall. More than 50 pairs of shoes belonging to children with special educational needs and disabilities, or SEND, were laid on the steps of County Hall in a silent protest on Monday, November the 3rd. It came as part of the National Every Pair Tells a Story Day of action, organised by the non-profit SEND Sanctuary UK, with the footwear meant to symbolise children in education and the fact they're being failed by the SEND system. Tied to each pair of shoes at Devon County Council's headquarters were handwritten tags with the names and the stories of the local children affected. Charlie Rhodes from Collerton is fighting to get her 11-year-old son into specialist SEND school. "The system has failed my child, and it's about getting the word out about how bad the system is for these children," she said. "I don't want to see any shoes here in the next year. I want the council to start taking responsibility and to be accountable because they're the ones that are failing our children." Holly Long from Lifton said her 4-year-old son, who has autism and is non-verbal, can't cope in mainstream schools. Despite him being offered a place at a specialist school, she said the council is forcing him to stay in preschool. "I've had to leave my job," she said, "so I could take care of my son because he's not able to access this education. When they said to me, 'I'm sorry, he can't go to the school that you want,' it was devastating because that would have been the perfect place for him to thrive." A Crediton mother, who wanted to stay anonymous, said she has 3 children with SEND needs, one of whom is coping in mainstream schooling, but 2 who have not been. "So I have 2 children who are now damaged long-term by their experience in mainstream schools," she said. "They're autistic children, misunderstood and with their needs not being met. And I'm having to pick up the pieces that day in, day out. Councillor Denise Bickley, who is the Devon County Council Cabinet Member responsible for the SEND service, went along to the protest and spoke with parents. Things do have to change. Within a national backdrop of failing systems, we can still do a lot better, she said. We need to make our education, health and care plans much more transparent, effective and timely, which we're working on. And there's a photo there with some very angry looking parents and some children, and each of the steps that lead up to County Hall have got pairs of shoes on with letters attached to them.
And moving on to a reminder of events that are on next week. Tuesday the 11th of November, Dawlish Community Transport are going to the House of Marbles. Kenton Church are hosting St Peter's Singers from Exeter Cathedral. On Wednesday, it's Coughton WI, and Friday is Quiz Night at Kenton Church, and Saturday, a winter warmer at Star Cross Church. And then Tuesday, the 18th of November, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Topsham and Darts Farm. Wednesday, the 19th, Holcombe Garden Society meet at 2:30 p.m. in the Village Hall for a talk on houseplants by Hutch Houseplants of Exeter. Also, Kenton Past and Present meet at the Victory Hall at 7:30 for a talk on the March of William of Orange through Devon in 1688. Saturday the 22nd, soup and dessert lunch at Kenton Church, 12 to 1:30, in aid of Force Cancer Charity. Also on Saturday, pub quiz at the Victory Hall, Kenton, 7 p.m. in aid of the Dolphin Pub. Also, a tabletop craft sale at the British Legion Club in Star Cross from 10 till 1 p.m, which is £8 a table, and everybody is welcome. And moving on to the remembrance events, which are planned for Teignbridge. For Dawlish, Sunday, November the 9th, a procession will leave the Baptist Church on Park Street at 2:40 p.m. and parade to the War Memorial for a remembrance service at 3 p.m. Tuesday, November the 11th, Dawlish Town Council and the Dawlish branch of the Royal British Legion will hold a two-minute silence at the Poppy Wall at 11 a.m. Star Cross, Sunday, November the 9th, there will be a service of remembrance at St Paul's Church at 10 a.m, followed by an act of remembrance at Starcross War Memorial at 10:45 a.m. And Teignmouth, Sunday, November the 9th, Red Rock A Cappella will perform on the Upper Den Carriageway from 10 a.m. as standard bearers and marching detachments gather. The remembrance service and parade starts at 10:45 at the War Memorial. Tuesday, November the 11th, the Mayor, councillors and representatives from the armed services will gather in Teignmouth Triangle at 10:45 for a short remembrance ceremony and 2 minutes silence. And also, I nearly forgot, Bishop's Tainton, Sunday, November the 9th, a civic service at Bishop's Tainton War Memorial from 10:45 a.m. Just three obituary announcements. The first one is Henry Albert William Collins, who passed away in Torbay Hospital on the 26th of October 2025, aged 86 years. The funeral service will be held at Exeter Crematorium on Monday the 17th of November at 10 a.m. Raymond George Crispin Ray, following a short illness, passed away at the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital on the 25th of October, aged 88. And his service will be held at St Peter's Chapel, Exeter Crematorium, on Wednesday the 12th of November at 1:30 p.m. Joyce Winifred Brazel passed away on the 27th of October 2025, aged 94 years, at her home in Claremont Manor. And all of those, there's no details of her remembrance service, but all of those obituaries, further details from Dawlish Funeral Care.
Dawlish Cliff Project wins Engineering Award.
A groundbreaking project to stabilise cliffs between Dawlish and Holcombe has won a top award. The £32 million network rail scheme was commended by judges in the Institution of Civil Engineering Awards 2025. The Dawlish to Holcombe Cliff Stabilisation Project won the Over a 10 Million Re-Engineered Award. The project forms part of the South West Rail Resilience Programme and impressed the judges with the scale and complexity of the challenge to secure 1.2 kilometres of steep cliffs prone to landslide. The pioneering approach used on the scheme to protect Devon's mainline link to London could now be used on other similar cliffs across the UK. The project involved stabilising steep, geologically sensitive coastal cliffs above the main railway line between Dawlish and Holcombe to safeguard the vital transport link. The cliffs were divided into 9 behavioural units and soil nails totalling 60 kilometres in length were installed in the cliffs along with 21,000 square metre of cliff netting. Working in a harsh marine environment, teams used rope access drilling on the vertical faces up to 40 metres high with up to 18 cliff-mounted rigs operating simultaneously. A key innovation was the development of a new combination bar solution which reduced embodied carbon and saved more than £7 million, allowing the full scope to be delivered despite inflationary pressures. Remarkably, the works were completed without disrupting the rail services, even during one of the wettest winters on record. The project, by contractors BAM Nuttall, Tony G and Partners, working with Network Rail, has helped protect local homes, supported 250 jobs, and included a skills development programme for local college students. It now provides a 100-year design life, ensuring long-term resilience. Judges said the project offered a pioneering approach to resilience work that has the potential to influence similar projects across the country. It embodied innovation, fresh thinking, and collaboration at its core, while tackling complex challenges with agility, strong community engagement, and effective teamwork.
End of an era as Dartmoor Visitor Centre to close. The end of an era is how DNPA, which is Dartmoor National Park Authority, has described the closure of one of its visitor centres. The Princetown Visitor Centre closed its doors for the final time on November the 1st. Since opening in the early 1990s, the centre has welcomed innumerable visitors. We would like to thank our dedicated members of staff from across the decades for their hard work and dedication in always providing visitors with a warm Dartmoor welcome, says the DNPA. It was announced in 2024 that the centre would close the following year due to funding challenges. The DNPA says that the decision to close was not made lightly and that it reflected the well-documented financial challenges facing England's national parks. And here in front of me there's a photograph of the Princetown Visitor Centre, and I must say from my own personal view it's a very, very sad happening that we can no longer go and visit what the centre has to offer.
Garden Centre helps charity allotment. A garden-run community allotment has been given a boost thanks to Teignbridge Garden Centre. West Bank Community Health and Care is launching the second stage redevelopment of this allotment in Exminster, and the programme is now being supported by Jack's Patch, part of Otter Garden Centres. The site is a strip of land behind the charity's Healthy Living Centre on Farmhouse Rise in Exminster. Volunteers from Kier Construction stepped in to support phase one of the project, which involved preparing and levelling the ground and creating a pathway to make the allotment accessible to wheelchair users. The involvement of Jack's Patch marks phase two of the project, establishing the allotment and cultivating fresh produce to help supply West Bank's Community Cookery School and two community larders. The long-term aim is to create an outdoor community space that's accessible to all, supporting people's physical and mental health and well-being. Dave McCarthy and James Gallagher from Jack's Patch Plants team carried out an initial recce on the site in mid-September, and they returned to start work at the end of September and again this month. Before embarking on the community allotment, they spent a full day pruning and weeding to make the sensory garden winter ready. Katie Elliott, West Bank's head of fundraising and marketing, said, "This kind of help is invaluable to our charity. We're absolutely delighted that the latest business we're developing a partnership with is Jack's Patch. Jack's Patch staff will be giving us the benefit of their horticultural expertise over the coming weeks and months in what we hope will become a long-term partnership. They'll be helping us to understand what we already have growing and how best to look after it, also advising us on how to make the best use of the space we have. As well as their time and skills, Jack's Patch is kindly supplying us with materials to ensure our growing project gets off to a healthy start, including plant seeds, planters, plant food, fencing, sleepers to make our raised beds, and even an arbour to shelter and relax in. They've also generously offered to help manage the rest of West Bank's outdoor space on an ongoing basis to ensure our sensory garden, borders and raised beds look as attractive and welcoming as possible." Jack's Patch branch manager Emma Devonade said, "The team is really excited to be involved. This is a project that we're keen to support, not just now, but for the long term. It's a pleasure to provide materials for the allotment and share our expertise from helping plan how best to use the space and advising on what and when to plant. As a garden centre, we know how valuable access to green spaces can be for well-being, and we really hope everyone involved in the community allotment gains a real sense of joy from it."
Steve completes 200th marathon in 200 days. A retired banker from Dartmoor ran through Tynmouth, Dawlish and Starcross on the final leg of an epic 200 marathons in 200 days challenge, and that was on last Saturday, November the 1st. Steve James is thought to be the first man over 60 to have covered the entire coastline of mainland Britain on foot. In the process, he has raised £30,000 for Cancer Research UK and for Devon and Exeter Scouts. Known as Banker on the Run, he began his feat on April the 16th and has spent the last 7 months running 5,240 miles along the British coast. His final leg on his 66th birthday saw him complete the circuit as he ran from Orstone to Topsham Quay. "It's been months of pushing my body to its limits. I'm proud, I'm exhausted, and I can't believe I've done it," he said. "When I started this challenge, I just wanted to see if I could do it. And to think I've run all the way round Britain at 66, even my knees can't believe it," he commented. "There were plenty of days I thought, what on earth am I doing? I've had every kind of weather and every kind of ache. But it's just shown me that you're never too old to take on something huge. You've just got to start and keep going." Throughout Steve's challenge, he's been monitored by researchers at the University of Exeter who've analysed his daily calorie intake, energy expenditure and body composition to monitor the impact of this high endurance accomplishment on his body. "We know exercise is good for us, but to what extent?" said Dr. Freya Haig, a nutritional psychology researcher at the University of Exeter. "We've seen no detriment to overall health from the fortnightly blood sample Steve has sent us, and the body measurement changes suggest that Steve's weight loss is a result of fat rather than muscle, which is a positive result to see after such a long time in an energy deficit," she commented. It has been such a privilege to work with Steve. His efforts give us such valuable knowledge about the body's ability to cope with the demands of such extreme endurance, Dr. Haig added. Steve is no stranger to physical challenges. In 2019, he cycled around the world in 220 days, and as a schoolboy, he took part in 10 tours. The challenge was not all plain sailing. He encountered harsh weather conditions, closed footpaths, severely blistered feet, and a severe gout flare-up that resulted in a trip to hospital. It has been quite the challenge, Steve reported. I've survived Storm Floris and Storm Amy, been through 7 pairs of trainers, become a state pensioner, and climbed the equivalent of Mount Everest 10 times. Steve now plans to decompress by slipping back into his normal family routine. He said he is looking forward to eating healthy food, not having wet feet, being able to sleep in, and not having to pound the trails mile after mile.
Ghoulish golfers at Tynmouth. Halloween horror was the order of the day for the ladies at Tynmouth Golf Club this week. A ghoulish array of characters turned up for this fun competition, with everything intent on terrifying the entrants. Pairs of witches, ghosts, ghouls, skeletons, mad axemen and devils were included in the field of 46 ladies, where the confusion continued with a mixture of formats, including greensomes, foursomes and American foursomes. And to add to that chaos, each team of two was secretly paired with one other, with their combined Stableford score giving the final result. You totally confused? Well, most of the ladies were, but the combined winners, with a total of 78 points, were delighted all the same time. They were Kate Krieber and Sarah Plunkett, paired with the top scoring pair, Lynn Blanford and Claire Walpole. There were plenty of spooky celebrations to be had. And I must say, judging from the photograph here in front of me, I think I would tend to agree with that.
Dawlish welcomes new black swan cygnets. On the 6th of November, 2 new black swan cygnets have hatched in Dawlish. Against all the odds, the 2 eggs have hatched and are being cared for on the nest by Dad Bert and Mum Kimber. There have been real fears the eggs would not survive, as the nest was built on a small island in the middle of the brook near Tuck's plot and was at risk from rising water levels. Efforts by volunteers from Wade and the town's waterfowl wardens, including raising the sluice gates, helped control the water levels and so protect the nest. Now all eyes are on the new cygnets. The hatching was watched live via video link from the Black Swan Cam, operated by Dawlish-based Coast Cams. Despite the challenges, the cygnets have now arrived and are being well cared for by their parents. And the waterfowl warden announced exciting news this morning. 2 black swan cygnets have hatched. Kimber and Bert are now proud parents once again, and the tiny grey fluff balls are already tucked safely under Mum's wings. It's such a heartwarming sight and a reminder of how lucky we are to have these beautiful birds right here in the heart of Dawlish. Welcome to the world, little ones, and to your new home on the brook. And there's a beautiful photo of, I guess it's Kimber, with the little cygnets nestling under her lovely feathers, looking very snug and warm.
Dolphin delights Dawlish boat trippers. A bottlenose dolphin has been delighting boat trippers off the coast of Dawlish. Rarer than its cousin, the common dolphin, the bottlenose came close to a vessel run by Dawlish boat trips several times during one of the company's last outings of the season. On board were the owners of holiday accommodation Pilchard Cottage, who captured the footage of the dolphin coming alongside the boat, the Molly R. They said, "I took an unexpected trip abroad aboard the Dolly R after Dawlish boat trip shared on Facebook that a dolphin had visited them during their first boat trip of the day. Although it's always potluck seeing these magnificent creatures in the wild, I hoped my chances of seeing one were highlighted as it was likely still in the area. We sailed from the breakwater at Town Beach towards a magnificent Parson and Clark rock formation, where an inquisitive seal popped his head out of the water to say hello. Within seconds, a bigger beast arrived in the form of this beautiful bottlenose dolphin, who then remained with us for the next 15 minutes, playing around the boat and in our wake. The bottlenose dolphins seen in South Devon are part of England's only resident coastal bottlenose pod, which is under threat. The population is estimated to consist of around 40 to 48 individuals. This small pod is known to travel in vast areas covering the entire south coast from North Devon and Cornwall over to East Sussex. Their movements are difficult to track and their presence in any one place is unpredictable. While common dolphins, which are regularly seen year-round off the South Devon coast, they are smaller, more slender and often travel in large acrobatic pods. Bottlenose dolphins are stockier and tend to appear in smaller, more social groups.
Dawlish Poppy Wall Tribute. Work has started on this year's Dawlish Poppy Wall. Volunteers began placing the knitted and crocheted poppies on the railings Dawlish Bowling Club on the lawn. Mayor of Dawlish Councillor Anthony James and Deputy Mayor Councillor Linda Littlewood joined in helping to string the handmade poppies ahead of this year's Remembrance Day events. More poppies can be added to the wall until November 14th. A town council spokesman said, "We're hoping there'll be even more poppies this year." You can knit or crochet a palm-sized red poppy and add it to the wall. Help us make our 2025 Poppy Wall a beautiful tribute of remembrance and gratitude. Last year's wall contained more than 1,000 poppies. The wall will be taken down after November the 14th and any poppies still in good condition will be dried and reused for 2026.
I'm now going to read you an article from the Mid-Devon Advertiser, and it relates to a team of students from Tynmouth Community School who took part in the UK Rocketry Championships this year. You might remember that there was an article in the Tynmouth Post about them back in the summer. I have several reasons for being interested in the progress of the team, and one of them is because my late husband, John Wedden, had written to the school a few years previously, asking them if they would be interested in starting a rocket club. John had a wealth of experience of model rocketry, as he took part in many competitions back in the 1980s and 90s, and he was also part of the UK team, which competed internationally. He actually wrote to several schools, but Tynmouth were the only ones who replied. And when their rocket club was set up, John used to go to the meetings, and he really enjoyed being able to offer his support to the team and to the club's teacher, Mark Hawker. So this is the article from the Mid-Devon Advertiser, and it's entitled Teen Rocket Champs Explore Space Tech Hub. A team of talented rocket designers from Tynmouth, who gained global recognition earlier this year, had their dreams of seeing space technology in action come true on a visit to the Airbus Defence and Space Facility in Stevenage last month. The teenagers from Tynmouth Community School Rocket Club were treated to a behind-the-scenes look at cutting-edge space engineering and technology on a rare tour of the facilities. Highlights included seeing the Eurostar satellite clean room, touring robotics labs, and exploring the Mars Yard, where future Mars rovers are tested. The students also designed their own satellite using computer-aided design, CAD, tools. which Airbus then printed and posted back to the school. Earlier this year, the team had won the UK Rocketry Championships, and part of their prize was this visit to the Airbus facility. Following their national competition win, the team, Kaya Sermon, Tom and Sammy Porter, and Keith Edwards, then went on to compete in the International Youth Rocketry Challenge at the Paris Air Show in June, where they narrowly missed out on winning the world title by 1 point. Well, I know this article hasn't been included in this week's Tynmouth Post, but I know John would be as proud of them as I am, and I did think that the team deserved another mention. So that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 073-761-47374. Your readers this week were Chris, Graham, Lynn and myself, and our producer is Mike. As usual, the copying and dispatching is a team effort. So until next time, it's goodbye from us here in the studio.
Goodbye. Goodbye.